sometimes up at the front, near the trees. And you sit there and wait for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, yawning and doing nothing, until the guard at the door, the fellow with the turban, mumbles into a microphone saying, "Driver so-and-so, you may come to the glass door with the car. Your master is waiting for you." The drivers were waiting near the parking lot of the hotel, in their usual keychain-swirling, pan-chewing, gossip-mongering, ammonia-releasing circle, crouching and jabbering like monkeys. The driver with the diseased lips was sitting apart from them, engrossed in his magazine. On this week's cover, there was a photo of a woman lying on a bed, her clothes undone. Her lover stood next to her, raising a knife over her head. Murder Weekly. ₹450. Exclusive true story. He wanted his master's wife. Love, rape, revenge. "Been thinking about what I said, Country Mouse?" he asked me, as he flipped through a story. "About getting your master something he'd like. Hashish, or girls, or golf balls. Genuine golf balls from the U.S. consulate. He's not that kind." The pink lips twisted into a smile. "Want to know a secret? My master likes film actresses. He takes them to a hotel in Jangpura, with a big glowing T sign on it, and hammers them there." He named three famous Mumbai actresses his master had hammered. "And yet he looks like a goody-goody. Only I know, and I tell you, all the masters are the same. One day you'll believe me. Now come read a story with me." We read like that, in total silence. After the third murder story, I went to the side, to a clump of trees, to take an ammonia break. He walked along with me. Our piss hit the bark of the tree just inches apart. "I've got a question for you." "About city girls again?" "No, about what happens to old drivers." "Huh? I mean, what will happen to me a few years from now? Do I make enough money to buy a house and then set up a business of my own?" "Well," he said, "a driver is good till he's 50 or 55. Then the eyes go bad and they kick you out, right? That's 30 years from now, Country Mouse. If you save from today, you'll make enough to buy a small home in some slum. If you've been a bit smarter and made a little extra on the side, then you'll have enough to put your son in a good school. He can learn English. He can go to university. That's the best case scenario. A house in a slum, a kid in college. Best case. Well, on the other hand, you can get typhoid from bad water. Boss sacks you for no reason. You get into an accident. Plenty of worst-case scenarios." I was still pissing, but he put a hand on me. "There's something I've got to ask you, Country Mouse. Are you all right?" I looked at him sideways. "I'm fine. Why do you ask?" "I'm sorry to tell you this, but some of the drivers are talking about it openly. You sit by yourself in your master's car the whole time. You talk to yourself. You know what you need? A woman. Have you seen the slum behind the malls? They're not bad-looking, nice and plump. Some of us go there once a week. You can come too."
"Driver Balram, where are you?"
It was the call from the microphone at the gate of the hotel. Mr. Turban was at the microphone, speaking in the most pompous, stern voice possible. "Driver Balram, report at once to the door. No delay, your master wants you." I zipped up and ran, wiping my wet fingers on the back of my pants. Mr. Ashok was walking out of the hotel with his hands around a girl when I brought the car up to the gate. She was a slant-eyed one with yellow skin, a foreigner, a Nepali, not even of his caste or background. She sniffed about the seats that I had polished, and jumped on them. Mr. Ashok put his hands on the girl's bare shoulders. I took my eyes away from the mirror. "I have never approved of debauchery inside cars, Mr. Jabal. But I could smell the mingling of their perfumes. I knew exactly what was going on behind me. I thought he would ask me to drive him home now, but no. The carnival of fun just went on and on. He wanted to go to PVR Circuit. Now, PVR Circuit is the scene of a big cinema, which shows 10 or 12 cinemas at the same time, and charges over 150 rupees per cinema. Yes, that's right. 150 rupees. That's not all. You've also got plenty of places to drink beer, dance, pick up girls, that sort of thing. A small bit of America in India. Beyond the last shining shop begins the second PVR. Every big market in Delhi is two markets in one. There is always a smaller, grimier mirror image of the real market, tucked somewhere into a by-lane. This is the market for the servants. I crossed over to the second PVR, a line of stinking restaurants, tea stalls, and giant frying pans where bread was toasted in oil. The men who work in the cinemas and who sweep them clean come here to eat. The beggars have their homes here. I bought a tea and a potato vada, and sat under a banyan tree to eat. "Brother, give me 3 rupees." An old woman, looking lean and miserable, with her hands stretched out. "I'm not one of the rich, mother. Go to that side and ask them."
"Brother."
"Let me eat, all right. Just leave me alone." She went. A knife grinder came and set up his stall right next to my tree. Holding 2 knives in his hand, he sat on his machine. It was one of the foot-pedaled whetstones, and began peddling. Sparks began buzzing a couple of inches away from me. "Brother, do you have to do your work here? Don't you see a human being is trying to eat?" He stopped peddling, blinked, then put the blades to the whizzing whetstone again, as if he hadn't heard a word I'd said. I threw the potato vada at his feet. "How stupid can you people get?" The old beggar woman made the crossing with me, into the other PVR. She hitched up her sari, took a breath, and then began her routine. "Sister, just give me 3 rupees. I haven't eaten since morning." A giant pile of old books lay in the center of the market, arranged in a large hollow square, like the mandala made at weddings to hold the sacred fire. A small man sat cross-legged on a stack of magazines in the center of the square of books, like the priest in charge of this mandala of print. The books drew me toward them like a big magnet, but as soon as he saw me, the man sitting on the magazine snapped, "All the books are in English." "So? Do you read English?" he barked. "Do you read English?" I retorted. There, that did it. Until then his tone of talking to me had been servant to servant. Now it became man to man. He stopped and looked me over from top to bottom. "No," he said, breaking into a smile, as if he appreciated my balls. "So how do you sell the books without knowing English?" "I know which book is what from the cover," he said. "I know this one is Harry Potter." He showed it to me. "I know this one is James Hadley Chase." He picked it up. "This is Khalil Gibran. This is Adolf Hitler, Desmond Bagley, The Joy of Sex. One time the publisher changed the Hitler cover so it looked like Harry Potter, and life was hell for a week after that. I just want to stand around the books. I had a book once, when I was a boy." "Suit yourself." So I stood around that big square of books. Standing around books, even books in a foreign language, you feel a kind of electricity buzzing up toward you, Your Excellency. It just happens, the way you get erect around girls wearing tight jeans. Except here what happens is that your brain starts to hum. 4,700 rupees in that brown envelope under my bed. Odd sum of money, wasn't it? There was a mystery to be solved here. Let's see. Maybe she started off giving me 5,000, and then being cheap, like all rich people are. Remember how the mongoose made me get down on my knees for that 1 rupee coin? Deducted 300. That's not how the rich think, you moron. Haven't you learned yet? She must have taken out 10,000 at first, then cut it in half, and kept half for herself, then taken out another 100 rupees, another 100, and another 100. That's how cheap they are. So that means they really owe you 10,000. But if she thought she owed you 10,000, then what she truly owed you was, what, 10 times more? No, 100 times more. The small man, putting down the newspaper he was reading, turned to me from inside his mandala of books.
"What did you say?" he shouted.
"Nothing."
He shouted again. "Hey, what do you do?"
I grabbed an imaginary wheel and turned it 180 degrees.
"Ah, I should have known. Drivers are smart men. They hear a lot of interesting things, right?"
"Other drivers might. I go deaf inside the car."
"Sure, sure. Tell me, you must know English. Some of what they talk must stick to you."
"I told you. I don't listen. How can it stick?"
"What does this word in the newspaper mean? Privacy."
I told him, and he smiled gratefully.
"We had just started the English alphabet when I got taken out of school by my family."
So he was another of the half-baked, my caste.
"Hey!" he shouted again. "Want to read some of this?"
He held up a magazine with an American woman on the cover, the kind that rich boys like to buy.
"It's good stuff."
I flicked through the magazine. He was right. It was good stuff.
"How much does this magazine sell for?"
60 rupees.
Would you believe that? 60 rupees for a used magazine? And there's a fellow in Khan Market who sells magazines from England that cost 508 rupees each. Would you believe that?
I raised my head to the sky and whistled.
"Amazing how much money they have,"
I said aloud, yet as if talking to myself. "And yet they treat us like animals." It was as if I had said something to disturb him, because he lowered and raised his paper a couple of times. Then he came to the very edge of the mandala, and partially hiding his face with the paper, whispered something. I cupped a hand around my ear.
"Say that again?"
He looked around and said, a bit louder this time,
"It won't last forever, though, the current situation."
"Why not?" I moved toward the mandala.
"Have you heard about the Naxals?" he whispered over the books. "They've got guns. They've got a whole army. They're getting stronger by the day."
"Really?"
"Just read the papers. The Chinese want a civil war in India, see? Chinese bombs are coming to Burma and into Bangladesh and then into Calcutta. They go down south into Andhra Pradesh and up into the darkness. When the time is right, all of India will..."
He opened his palms. We talked like this for a while, but then our friendship ended, as all servant-servant friendships must, with our masters bellowing for us. A gang of rich kids wanted to be shown a smutty American magazine, and Mr. Ashok came walking out of a bar, staggering, stinking of liquor. The Nepali girl was with him. On the way back, the two of them were talking at the top of their voices, and then the petting and kissing began. My God, and he a man who was still lawfully married to another woman. I was so furious that I drove right through 4 red lights and almost smashed into an ox cart that was going down the road with a load of kerosene cans, but they never noticed.
"Good night, Balram," Mr. Ashok shouted as he got out, hand in hand with her.
"Good night, Balram,"
she shouted. They ran into the apartment and took turns jabbing the call button for the elevator. When I got to my room, I searched under the bed. It was still there, the Maharaja tunic that he had given me, the turban and dark glasses, too. I drove the car out of the apartment block, dressed like a Maharaja with the dark glasses on. No idea where I was going. I just drove around the malls. Each time I saw a pretty girl, I hooted the horn at her and her friends. I played his music. I ran his AC at full blast. I drove back to the building, took the car down into the garage, folded the dark glasses into my pocket, and took off the tunic. I spat over the seats of the Honda City and wiped them clean. The next morning, he didn't come down or call me up to his room. I took the elevator and stood near the door. I was feeling guilty about what I'd done the previous night. I wondered if I should make a full confession. I reached for the bell a few times and then sighed and gave up. After a while, there were soft noises from inside. I put my ear to the wood and listened.
But I have changed.
Don't keep apologizing.
I had more fun last evening than in 4 years of marriage.
When you left for New York, I thought I'd never see you again. And now I have. That's the main thing for me. I turned away from the door and slapped my fist into my forehead. My guilt was growing by the minute. She was his old lover, you fool, not some pickup. Of course, he would never go for a slut. I had always known that he was a good man, a cut above me. I pinched my left palm as punishment, and put my ear to the door again. The phone began to ring from inside. Silence for a while, and then he said, "That's Puddles, and that's Cuddles. You remember them, don't you? They always bark for me. Here, take the phone. Listen." "Bad news?" Her voice, after a few minutes. "You look upset." "I have to go see a cabinet minister. I hate doing that. They're all so slimy. The business I'm in, it's a bad one. I wish I were doing something else, something clean, like outsourcing. Every day I wish it." "Why don't you do something else, then? It was the same when they told you not to marry me. You couldn't say no then, either." "It's not that simple, Uma. They're my father and brother." "I wonder if you have changed, Ashok. The first call from Dhanbad and you're back to your old self." "Look, let's not fight again. I'll send you back in the car now." "Oh, no. I'm not going back with your driver. I know his kind, the village kind. They think that any unmarried woman they see is a whore, and he probably thinks I'm a Nepali because of my eyes. You know what that means for him. I'll go back on my own." "This fellow is all right. He's part of the family." "You shouldn't be so trusting, Ashok. Delhi drivers are all rotten. They sell drugs and prostitutes, and God knows what else." "Not this one. He's stupid as hell, but he is honest. He'll drive you back."
"No, Ashok. I'll get a taxi." "I'll call you in the evening."
I realized that she was edging toward the door, and I turned and tiptoed away. There was no word from him until evening, and then he came down for the car. He made me go from one bank to another bank. Sitting in the driver's seat, I watched through the corner of my eye. He was collecting money from the automatic cash machines, 4 different ones. Then he said, "Balram, go to the city. You know the big house that's on the Ashoka Road, where we went with Mukesh Siyar once?"
"Yes, sir, I remember.
They've got 2 big Alsatian guard dogs, sir."
"Exactly.
Your memory's good, Balram. I saw in the spy mirror that Mr. Ashok was pressing the buttons of his cell phone as I drove, probably telling the minister's servant that he was coming with the cash. So now I understood at last what work my master was doing as I drove him through Delhi. "I'll be back in 20 minutes, Balram," Mr. Ashok said when we got to the minister's bungalow. He stepped out with the red bag and slammed the door. A security guard with a rifle sat in a metal booth over the red wall of the minister's house, watching me carefully. The 2 Alsatian dogs roaming the compound barked now and then. It was the hour of sunset. The birds of the city began to make a ruckus as they flew home. "Now, Delhi, Mr. Premier, is a big city. But there are wild places in it, big parks, protected forests, stretches of wasteland, and things can suddenly come out of these wild places." As I was watching the red wall of the minister's house, a peacock flew up over the guard's booth and perched there. For an instant its deep blue neck and its long tail turned golden in the setting sunlight, then it vanished. In a little while it was night. The dogs began barking. The gate opened. Mr. Ashok came out of the minister's house with a fat man, the same man who had come out that day from the president's house. I guessed that he was the minister's assistant. They stopped in front of the car and talked. The fat man shook hands with Mr. Ashok, who was clearly eager to leave him. But it isn't so easy to let go of a politician, or even a politician's sidekick. I got out of the car, pretending to check the tires, and moved into eavesdropping distance.
"Don't worry, Ashok. I'll make sure the minister gives your father a call tomorrow."
"Thank you.
My family appreciates your help."
"What are you doing after this?"
"Nothing. Just going home to Gurgaon."
"A young man like you going home this early?
Let's have some fun."
Don't you have to work on the elections?
The elections? All wrapped up. It's a landslide. The minister said so this morning. Elections, my friend, can be managed in India. It's not like in America.
Brushing aside Mr. Ashok's protests, the fat man forced his way into the car. We had just started down the road when he said, "Ashok, let me have a whiskey."
"Here, in the car?
I don't have any." The fat man seemed astonished.
"Everyone has whiskey in their car in Delhi, Ashok. Didn't you know this?"
He told me to go back to the minister's bungalow. He went inside and came back with a pair of glasses and a bottle. He slammed the door, breathed out, and said,
"Now this car is fully equipped."
Mr. Ashok took the bottle and got ready to pour the fat man a glass, when he smacked his lips in annoyance.
"Not you, you fool. The driver. He is the one who pours the drinks."
I turned around at once and turned myself into a barman.
"This driver is very talented," the fat man said. "Sometimes they make a mess of pouring a drink."
You'd never guess that his caste was a teetotaling one, would you?
I tightened the cap on the bottle and left it next to the gearbox.
I heard the clinking of glasses behind me and two voices saying, "Cheers."
"Let's go," the minister's sidekick said. "Let's go to the Sheraton, driver. There's a good restaurant down in the basement there, Ashok. Quiet place. We'll have some fun there."
I turned the ignition key and took the dark egg of the Honda City down the streets of New Delhi.
"A man's car is a man's palace. I can't believe you've never done this."
"Well, you'd never try it in America, would you?"
"That's the whole advantage of being in Delhi, dear boy."
The fat man slapped Mr. Ashok's thigh.
He sipped and said, "What's your situation, Ashok?"
"Coal trading these days. People think it's only technology that's booming.
But coal? The media pays no attention to coal, does it?
The Chinese are consuming coal like crazy, and the price is going up everywhere. Millionaires are being made left, right, and center."
"Sure, sure," the fat man said. "The China effect."
He sniffed his glass. "But that's not what we in Delhi mean when we say situation, dear boy." The minister's sidekick smiled.
"Basically what I'm asking is, who services you down there?"
He pointed at a part of Mr. Ashok's body that he had no business pointing at. "I am separated, going through a divorce."
"I'm sorry to hear that," the fat man said. "Marriage is a good institution. Everything's coming apart in this country. Families, marriages, everything."
He sipped some more whiskey and said, "Tell me, Ashok, do you think there will be a civil war in this country?"
"Why do you say that?" "4 days ago, I was in a court in Ghaziabad. The judge gave an order that the lawyers didn't like, and they simply refused to accept his order. They went mad. They dragged the judge down and beat him in his own court. The matter was not reported in the press, but I saw it with my own eyes. If people start beating the judges in their own courtrooms, then what is the future for our country?"
Something icy cold touched my neck. The fat man was rubbing me with his glass.
"Another drink, driver."
"Yes, sir."
"Have you ever seen this trick, Your Excellency?
A man steering the car with one hand and picking up a whiskey bottle with the other hand, hauling it over his shoulder, then pouring it into a glass, even as the car is moving without spilling a drop. The skills required of an Indian driver. Not only does he have to have perfect reflexes, night vision, and infinite patience, he also has to be the consummate barman.
Would you like some more, sir?"
I glanced at the minister's sidekick, at the fat, corrupt folds of flesh under his chin, then glanced at the road to make sure I wasn't driving into anything.
"Pour one for your master now."
"No, I don't drink much,
really.
I'm fine."
"Don't be silly, Ashok, I insist. Fellow, pour one for your master."
So I had to turn and do the amazing one hand on the wheel, one hand with the whiskey bottle trick all over again. The fat man went quiet after the second drink. He wiped his lips.
"When you were in America, you must have had a lot of women. I mean, the local women."
"No."
"No? What does that mean?"
"I was faithful to Pinky, my wife, the whole time."
My, you were faithful. What an idea. Faithfully married. No wonder it ended in divorce. Have you never had a white woman?
I told you.
God, why is it always the wrong kind of Indian who goes abroad? Listen, do you want one now? A European girl?
Now?
Now, he said. A female from Russia. She looks just like that American actress.
He mentioned the name. Want to do it?
A whore. The fat man smiled. A friend. A magical friend. Want to do it?
No. Thanks. I'm seeing someone. I just met someone I knew along...
The fat man took out his cell phone and punched some numbers. The light of the phone made a blue halo on his face.
She's there right now.
Let's go see her. She's a stunner, I tell you. Just like that American actress. Do you have 30,000 on you?
No, listen, I'm seeing someone. I'm not...
No problem. I'll pay now. You can pay later. Just put it into the next envelope you give the minister. He put his hand on Mr. Ashok's hand and winked, then leaned over and gave instructions to me. I looked at Mr. Ashok in the rearview mirror as hard as I could.
A whore? That's for people like me, sir. Are you sure you want this?
I wish I could have told him this openly. But who was I? Just the driver. I took orders from the fat man. Mr. Ashok said nothing, just sat there sucking his whiskey like a boy with a soda. Maybe he thought it was a joke, or maybe he was too frightened of the fat man to say no. But I will defend his honor to my deathbed. They corrupted him. The fat man made me drive to a place in Greater Kailash, another housing colony where people of quality live in Delhi. Touching my neck with his icy glass when I had to make a turn, he guided me to the place. It was as large as a small palace, with big white columns of marble up the front. From the amount of garbage thrown outside the walls of the house, you knew that rich people lived here. The fat man held open the car door as he spoke into a phone. 5 minutes later, he slammed the door shut. I began sneezing. A weird perfume had filled the back of the car.
Stop that sneezing and drive us toward Jangpura, son.
Sorry, sir.
The fat man smiled. He turned to the girl who had got into the car and said, Speak to my friend Ashok in Hindi, please. I looked into the rearview mirror and caught my first glimpse of this girl. It's true. She did look like an actress I had seen somewhere or other. The name of the actress, though, I don't know. It's only when I came to Bangalore and mastered the use of the Internet, in just 2 quick sessions, mind you, that I found her photo and name on Google. Kim Basinger. That was the name the fat man had mentioned, and it was true. The girl who got in with the fat man did look exactly like Kim Basinger. She was tall and beautiful, but the most remarkable thing about her was her hair, golden and glossy, just like in the shampoo advertisements. How are you, Ashok? She said it in perfect Hindi. She put her hand out and took Mr. Ashok's hand. The minister's assistant chuckled. There. India has progressed, hasn't it? She's speaking in Hindi. He slapped her on the thigh. Your Hindi has improved, dear.
Mr. Ashok leaned back to speak to the fat man over her shoulder.
Is she Russian?
Ask her. Don't ask me, Ashok. Don't be shy. She's a friend.
Ukrainian, she said in her accented Hindi. I am a Ukrainian student in India.
I thought I would have to remember this place, Ukraine, and one day I would have to go there.
Ashok, the fat man said, go on, touch her hair.
It's real. Don't be scared.
She's a friend.
He chuckled.
See, didn't hurt.
Did it, Ashok? Say something in Hindi to Mr. Ashok, dear. He's still frightened of you.
You're a handsome man, she said. Don't be frightened of me.
Driver, the fat man leaned forward and touched me with his gold glass again. Are we near Jangpura?
Yes, sir.
When you go down the Masjid Road, you'll see a hotel with a big neon T sign on it. Take us there. I got them there in 10 minutes. You couldn't miss the hotel. The big T sign on it glowed like a lantern in the dark.
Taking the golden-haired woman with him, the fat man went up to the hotel reception, where the manager greeted him warmly. Mr. Ashok walked behind them and kept looking from side to side, like a guilty little boy about to do something very bad. Half an hour passed. I was outside, my hands on the wheels the whole time. I punched the little ogre. I began to gnaw at the wheel. I kept hoping he'd come running out, arms flailing and screaming, "Balram, I was on the verge of making a mistake. Save me, let's drive away at once." An hour later, Mr. Ashok came out of the hotel, alone, and looking ill. "The meeting's over, Balram," he said, letting his head fall back on the seat. "Let's go home." I didn't start the car for a second. I kept my finger on the ignition key. "Balram, let's go home," I said. "Yes, sir." When we got back to Gurgaon, he staggered out toward the elevator. I did not leave the car. I let 5 minutes pass and then drove back to Jangpura, straight to the hotel with the tea on it. I parked in a corner and watched the door of the hotel. I wanted her to come out. A rickshaw puller drove up next to me, a small, unshaven, stick-thin man who looked dead tired as he wiped his face and legs clean with a rag and went to sleep on the ground. On the seat of his rickshaw was a white advertising sticker. "Is excess weight a problem for you? Call Jimmy Singh at Metro Gym, 9811-799-289. The mascot of the gym, an American with enormous white muscles, smiled at me from above the slogan. The rickshaw puller's snoring filled the air. Someone in the hotel must have seen me. After a while, the door opened. A policeman came out, peered at me, and then began walking down the steps. I turned the key. I took the car back to Gurgaon. Now, I've driven around Bangalore at night, too, but I never get that feeling here that I did in Delhi. The feeling that if something is burning inside me as I drive, the city will know about it. She will burn with the same thing. My heart was bitter that night. The city knew this, and under the dim orange glow cast everywhere by the weak street lamps, she was bitter. "Speak to me of civil war," I told Delhi. "I will," she said. An overturned flour urn on a traffic island in the middle of a road. Next to it, three men sit with open mouths. An older man with a beard and white turban is talking to them with a finger upraised. Cars drive by him with their dazzling headlights, and the noise drowns out his words. He looks like a prophet in the middle of the city, unnoticed except by his three apostles. They will become his three generals. That overturned flour urn is a symbol of some kind. "Speak to me of blood on the streets," I told Delhi. "I will," she said. I saw other men discussing and talking and reading in the night, alone or in clusters around the street lamps. By the dim lights of Delhi, I saw hundreds that night, under trees, shrines, intersections, on benches, squinting at newspapers, holy books, journals, Communist Party pamphlets. What were they reading about? What were they talking about? But what else? Of the end of the world. "And if there is blood on these streets," I asked the city, "do you promise that he'll be the first to go, that man with the fat folds under his neck?" A beggar, sitting by the side of the road, a nearly naked man coated with grime, and with wild unkempt hair in long coils like snakes, looked into my eyes. "Promise." Coloured pieces of glass have been embedded into the boundary wall of Buckingham Towers B block to keep robbers out. When the headlights hit them, the shards glow, and the wall turns into a technicolored glass-spined monster. The gatekeeper stared at me as I drove in. I saw rupee notes shining in his eyes. This was the second time he had seen me going out and returning on my own. In the parking lot, I got out of the driver's seat and carefully closed the door. I opened the passenger's door and went inside, and passed my hand along the leather. I passed my hands from one side of the leather seats to the other three times, and then I found what I was looking for. I held it up to the light. A strand of golden hair.
I've got it in my desk to this day. The sixth night. The dreams of the rich and the dreams of the poor, they never overlap, do they? See, the poor dream all their lives of getting enough to eat and looking like the rich. And what do the rich dream of? Losing weight and looking like the poor. Every evening the compound around Buckingham Towers B block becomes an exercise ground. Plump, paunchy men and even plumper, paunchier women with big circles of sweat below their arms are doing their evening walking. See, with all these late-night parties, all that drinking and munching, the rich tend to get fat in Delhi, so they walk to lose weight. Now, where should a human being walk? In the outdoors, by a river, inside a park, around a forest. However, displaying their usual genius for town planning, the rich of Delhi had built this part of Gurgaon with no parks, lawns or playgrounds. It was just buildings, shopping malls, hotels, and more buildings. There was a pavement outside, but that was for the poor to live on. So if you wanted to do some walking, it had to be done around the concrete compound of your own building. Now, while they walked around the apartment block, the fatsos made their thin servants, most of them drivers, stand at various spots on that circle with bottles of mineral water and fresh towels in their hands. Each time they completed a circuit around the building, they stopped next to their man, grabbed the bottle, gulp, grabbed the towel, wipe, wipe. Then it was off on round two. Vitiligo Lips was standing in one corner of the compound, with his bottle and his master's sweaty towel. Every few minutes, he turned to me with a twinkle in his eyes. His boss, the steel man, who was bald until 2 weeks ago, now sported a head of thick black hair, an expensive toupee job he had gone all the way to England for. This toupee was the main subject of discussion in the monkey circle these days. The other drivers had offered Vitiligo Lips 10 rupees to resort to the old tricks of braking unexpectedly or taking the car full speed over a pothole to knock over his master's toupee at least once. The secrets of their masters were spilled and dissected every evening by the monkey circle, though if any of them made the divorce a topic of discussion, he knew he would have to deal with me. On Mr. Ashok's privacy, I allowed no one to infringe. I was standing just a few feet from Vitiligo Lips, with my master's bottle of mineral water in my hand and his sweat-stained towel on my shoulder. Mr. Ashok was about to complete his circle. I could smell his sweat coming toward me. This was round number 3 for him. He took the bottle, drained it, wiped his face with his towel, and draped it back on my shoulder. "I'm done, Balram. Bring the towel and bottle up, okay?" "Yes, sir," I said, and watched him go into the apartment block. He took a walk once or twice a week, but it clearly wasn't enough to counter his nights of debauchery. I saw a big wet paunch pressing against his white T-shirt. How repulsive he was these days. I signaled to Vitiligo Lips before going down to the parking lot. 10 minutes later, I smelled the steel man's sweat and heard footsteps. Vitiligo Lips had come down. I called him over to the Honda City. It was the only place in the world I felt fully safe anymore. "What is it, Country Mouse? Want another magazine?" "Not that. Something else." I got down on my haunches. I squatted by one of the tires of the City. I scraped the grooves of the tire with a fingernail. He squatted too. I showed him the strand of golden hair. I kept it tied around my wrist like a locket. He brought my wrist to his nose. He rubbed the strand between his fingers, sniffed it, and let my wrist down. "No problem," he winked. "I told you your master would get lonely." "Don't talk about him." I seized his neck. He shook me off. "Are you crazy? You tried to choke me." I scraped the grooves of the tire again. "How much will it cost? High class or low class? Virgin or non-virgin? All depends." "I don't care. She just has to have golden hair, like in the shampoo advertisements." "Cheapest is 10, 12,000. "That's too much. He won't pay more than 4,700. 6,500, Country Mouse. That's the minimum. White skin has to be respected.
All right.
When does he want it, Country Mouse?
I'll tell you. It'll be soon.
And another thing. I want to know another thing.
I put my face on the tire and breathed in the smell of the leather.
For strength.
How many ways are there for a driver to cheat his master?
Mr. Jabbao, I am aware that it is a common feature of those cellophane-wrapped business books to feature small sidebars. At this stage of the story, to relieve you of tedium, I would like to insert my own sidebar into the narrative of the modern entrepreneur's growth and development. How does the enterprising driver earn a little extra cash? 1. When his master is not around, he can siphon petrol from the car with a funnel, then sell the petrol. When his master orders him to make a repair to the car, he can go to a corrupt mechanic. The mechanic will inflate the price of the repair, and the driver will receive a cut. This is a list of a few entrepreneurial mechanics who help entrepreneurial drivers. Lucky Mechanics in Lado Serai, near the Kutub. RV Repairs in Greater Kailash Part 2. Nilofar Mechanics in DLF Phase 1 in Gurgaon. 3. He should study his master's habits and then ask himself, is my master careless? If so, what are the ways in which I can benefit from his carelessness? For instance, if his master leaves empty English liquor bottles lying around in the car, he can sell the whiskey bottles to the bootleggers. Johnny Walker Black brings the best resale value. 4. As he gains in experience and confidence, and is ready to try something riskier, he can turn his master's car into a freelance taxi. The stretch of the road from Gurgaon to Delhi is excellent for this. Lots of Romeos come to see their girlfriends who work in the call centers. Once the entrepreneurial driver is sure that his master is not going to notice the absence of the car, and that none of his master's friends are likely to be on the road at this time, he can spend his free time cruising around, picking up and dropping off paying customers. At night, I lay in my mosquito net, the light bulb on in my room, and watch the dark roaches crawling on top of the net, their antennae quivering and trembling, like bits of my own nerves. And I lay in bed, too agitated even to reach out and crush them. A cockroach flew down and landed right above my head. You should have asked them for money when they made you sign that thing. Enough money to sleep with 20 white-skinned girls. It flew away. Another landed on the same spot. 20? 100, 200, 300, 1,000, 10,000 golden-haired whores, and even that would still not have been enough. That would not start to be enough. Over the next 2 weeks, I did things I am still ashamed to admit. I cheated my employer. I siphoned his petrol. I took his car to a corrupt mechanic who billed him for work that was not necessary. And 3 times, while driving back to Buckingham B, I picked up a paying customer. The strangest thing was that each time I looked at the cash I had made by cheating him, instead of guilt, what did I feel? Rage. The more I stole from him, the more I realized how much he had stolen from me. To go back to the analogy I used when describing Indian politics to you earlier, I was growing a belly at last. Then one Sunday afternoon, when Mr. Ashok had said he wouldn't need me again that day, I gulped 2 big glasses of whiskey for courage, then went to the servants' dormitory. Vitiligo lips were sitting beneath the poster of a film actress. Each time his master hammered an actress, he put her poster up on the wall, playing cards with the other drivers. Well, you can say what you want, but I know that these jokers aren't going to win re-election. He looked up and saw me. Well, look who's here. It's the yoga guru, paying us a rare visit. Welcome, honored sir. They showed me their teeth. I showed them my teeth. We were discussing the elections, Country Mouse. You know, it's not like the darkness here. The elections aren't rigged. Are you going to vote this time? I summoned him with a finger. He shook his head. Later, Country Mouse. I'm having too much fun discussing the elections. I waved the brown envelope in the air. He put his cards down at once. I insisted that we walk down to the parking lot. He counted the money there, in the shadow of the Honda City. Good, Country Mouse. It's all here. And where is your master? Will you drive him there? I am my own master. He didn't get it for a minute. Then his jaw dropped. He rushed forward. He hugged me. Country Mouse! He hugged me again. My man! He was from the darkness, too. And you feel proud when you see one of your own kind showing some ambition in life. He drove me in the Qualis, his master's Qualis, to the hotel, explaining on the way that he ran an informal taxi service when the boss wasn't around. The hotel was in South Extension Part 2, one of the best shopping areas in Delhi. Vitiligo Lips locked his Qualis, smiled reassuringly, and walked with me up to the reception desk. A man in a white shirt and black bow tie was running his finger down the entries in a long ledger, leaving his finger on the book. He looked at me as Vitiligo Lips explained things into his ear. The manager shook his head. A golden-haired woman? For him? He put his hands on the counter and leaned over so he could see me from the toes up. For him? Vitiligo Lips smiled. Look here. The rich of Delhi have had all the golden-haired women they want. Who knows what they'll want next? Green-haired women from the moon? Now it's going to be the working class that lines up for the white women. This fellow is the future of your business, I tell you. Treat him well. The manager seemed uncertain for a moment. Then he slammed the ledger shut and showed me an open palm. Give me 500 rupees extra, he grinned. Working class surcharge. I don't have it. Give me 500 or forget it. I took out the last 300 rupees I had. He took the cash, straightened his tie, and then went up the stairs. Vitiligo Lips patted me on the shoulder and said, Good luck, Country Mouse. Do it for all of us. I ran up the stairs. Room 114A. The manager was standing at the door with his ear to it. He whispered, Anastasia? He knocked, then put his ear to the door again and said, Anastasia, are you in? He pushed the door open. A chandelier, a window, a green bed, and a girl with golden hair sitting on the bed. I sighed because this one looked nothing like Kim Basinger, not half as pretty. That was when it hit me, in a way it never had before. How the rich always get the best things in life, and all that we get is the leftovers. The manager brought both his palms up to my face. He opened and closed them, and then did it again. 20 minutes. Then he made a knocking motion with his fist, followed by a kicking motion with his shiny black boot. Get it? That's what would happen to me after 20 minutes. Yes. He slammed the door. The woman with the golden hair still wasn't looking at me. I had only summoned up the courage to sit down by her side when there was banging on the door outside. When you hear that, it's over. Get it? The manager's voice. All right. I moved closer to the woman on the bed. She neither resisted nor encouraged. I touched a curl of her hair and pulled it gently to get her to turn her face toward me. She looked tired and worn out. And there were bruises around her eyes, as if someone had scratched her. She gave me a big smile. I knew it well. It was the smile a servant gives a master. What's your name? She asked in Hindi. This one, too. They must have a Hindi language school for girls in this country, Ukraine, I swear. Muna. She smiled. That's not a real name. It just means boy. That's right. But it's my name, I said. My family gave me no other name. She began laughing, a high-pitched, silvery laugh that made her whole golden head of hair bob up and down. My heart beat like a horse's. Her perfume went straight to my brain. You know, when I was young, I was given a name in my language that just meant girl,
My family did the same thing to me.
Wow, I said, curling my legs up on the bed.
We talked. She told me she hated the mosquitoes in this hotel, and the manager, and I nodded. We talked for a while like this, and then she said, "You're not a bad-looking fellow, and you're quite sweet," and then ran her finger through my hair. At this point, I jumped out of the bed. I said, "Why are you here, sister? If you want to leave this hotel, why don't you? Don't worry about the manager. I'm here to protect you. I am your own brother, Balaram Halway."
"Sure," I said that. "In the Hindi film they'll make of my life. 7,000 sweet rupees for 20 minutes. Time to get started." That was what I actually said. I climbed on top of her and held her arms behind her head with one hand. Time to dip my beak in her. I let the other hand run through the golden curls. And then I shrieked. I could not have shrieked louder if you had shown me a lizard.
"What happened, Mona?" she asked.
I jumped off the bed and slapped her.
"My, these foreigners can yell when they want to."
Immediately, as if the manager had been there all the time, his ear to the door, grinning, the door burst open and he came in.
"This," I shouted at him, pulling the girl by her hair, "is not real gold."
The roots were black. It was all a dye job. He shrugged.
"What do you expect for 7,000? The real thing costs 40, 50.
I leapt at him, caught his chin in my hand, and rammed it against the door. "I want my money back." The woman let out a scream from behind me. I turned around. That was the mistake I made. I should have finished off that manager right there and then. 10 minutes later, with a scratched and bruised face, I came tumbling out the front door. It slammed behind me. Vitiligo lips hadn't waited. I had to take a bus back home. I was rubbing my head the whole time. 7,000 rupees. I wanted to cry. Do you know how many water buffaloes you could have bought for that much money? I could feel Granny's fingers wringing my ears. Back to Buckingham Towers at last, after a one-hour traffic jam on the road, I washed the wound on my head in the common sink and then spat a dozen times. To hell with everything. I scratched my groin. I needed that. I slouched toward my room, kicked open the door, and froze. Someone was inside the mosquito net. I saw a silhouette in the lotus position.
"Don't worry, Balram. I know what you were doing."
A man's voice. Well, at least it wasn't Granny. That was my first thought. Mr. Ashok lifted up a corner of the net and looked at me, a sly grin on his face.
"I know exactly what you were doing."
"Sir?"
"I was calling your name and you weren't responding, so I came down to see. But I know exactly what you were doing. The other driver, the man with pink lips, he told me." My heart pounded. I looked down at the ground. "He said you were at the temple, offering prayers for my health."
"Yes, sir,"
I said, with sweat pouring down my face in relief.
"That's right, sir."
"Come inside the net," he said softly. I went in and sat next to him inside the mosquito net. He was looking at the roaches walking above us.
"You live in such a hole, Balram."
"I never knew. I'm sorry."
"It's all right, sir. I'm used to it."
"I'll give you some money, Balram. You go into some better housing tomorrow, okay?"
He caught my hand and turned it over.
"Balram, what are all these red marks on your palm? Have you been pinching yourself?"
"No, sir. It's a skin disease. I've got it here, too, behind my ear. See? All those pink spots."
He came close, filling my nostrils with his perfume, bending my ear with a finger, gently. He looked.
"My, I never noticed. I sit behind you every day, and I never..."
"A lot of people have this disease, sir. A lot of poor people."
"Really? I haven't noticed. Can you get it treated?"
"No, sir. The diseases of the poor can never get treated. My father had TB, and it killed him."
"It's the 21st century, Balram. Anything can be treated. You go to the hospital and get it treated. Send me the bill. I'll pay it."
"Thank you, sir," I said.
Sir, do you want me to take you somewhere in the city? He opened his lips and then closed them without making any noise. He did this a couple of times, and then he said, My way of living is all wrong, Balram. I know it, but I don't have the courage to change it. I just don't have the balls. Don't think so much about it, sir. And, sir, let's go upstairs, I beg you. This is not a place for a man of quality like yourself. I let people exploit me, Balram. I've never done what I've wanted. My whole life I... His head sagged. His whole body looked tired and worn. You should eat something, sir, I said. You look tired. He smiled, a big, trusting baby's smile. You're always thinking of me, Balram. Yes, I want to eat. But I don't want to go to another hotel, Balram. I'm sick of hotels. Take me to the kind of place you go to eat, Balram. Sir, I'm sick of the food I eat, Balram. I'm sick of the life I lead. We rich people. We've lost our way, Balram. I want to be a simple man like you, Balram. Yes, sir. We walked outside and I led him across the road and into a tea shop. Order for us, Balram. Order the commoner's food. I ordered okra, cauliflower, radish, spinach, and dal, enough to feed a whole family, or one rich man. He ate and burped and ate some more. This food is fantastic, and just 25 rupees. You people eat so well. When he was done, I ordered him a lassi, and when he took the first sip, he smiled. I like eating your kind of food. I smiled and thought, I like eating your kind of food, too. The divorce papers will come through soon. That's what the lawyer said. All right. Should we start looking already? For another lawyer? No. For another girl. It's too early, Mukesh. It's been just 3 months since she left. I had driven Mr. Ashok to the train station. The mongoose had come to town again from Dhanbad. Now I was driving both of them back to the apartment. All right, take your time, but you must remarry. If you stay a divorced man, people won't respect you. They won't respect us. It's the way our society works. Listen to me. Last time, you didn't listen. When you married a girl from outside our caste, our religion, you even refused to take dowry from her parents. This time we'll pick the girl. I heard nothing. I could tell that Mr. Ashok was clenching his teeth. I can see you're getting worked up, the mongoose said. We'll talk about it later. For now, take this. He handed his brother a red bag that he had brought with him from Dhanbad. Mr. Ashok clicked open the bag and peered inside, and at once the mongoose slammed the bag shut. Are you crazy? Don't open that here in the car. It's for Mukeshan, the fat man, the assistant. You know him, don't you? Yes, I know him. Mr. Ashok shrugged. Didn't we already pay those bastards off? The minister wants more. It's election time. Every time there's elections, we hand out cash, usually to both sides. But this time the government is going to win for sure. The opposition is in a total mess. So we just have to pay off the government, which is good for us. I'll come with you the first time, but it's a lot of money. And you may have to go a second and third time, too. And then there are a couple of bureaucrats we have to grease. Get it? It seems like this is all I get to do in Delhi. Take money out of banks and bribe people. Is this what I came back to India for? Don't be sarcastic. And remember, ask for the bag back each time. It's a good bag, Italian made. No need to give them any additional gifts. Understand? Oh, hell, not another fucking traffic jam. Balram, play Sting again. It's the best music for a traffic jam. The driver knows who Sting is. Sure, he knows it's my favorite CD. Show us the Sting CD, Balram. See? See? He knows Sting. I put the CD into the player. 10 minutes passed and the cars had not moved an inch. I replaced Sting with Enya. I replaced Enya with M&M. Vendors came to the car with baskets of oranges or strawberries in plastic cases or newspapers or novels in English. The beggars were on the attack too.
One beggar was carrying another on his shoulders, and going from car to car. The fellow on his shoulders had no legs below his knees. They went together from car to car, the fellow without the legs moaning and groaning, and the other fellow tapping or scratching on